The Senate will return Monday and stay in session through Thursday. The House will return Tuesday and stay in session through Friday. This week in the House will return Tuesday with the first vote set for 6:30 p.m. At that time, the House is scheduled to consider 13 bills under suspension of the rules. On Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, the House will consider 4 bills with a rule. They are H.R. 529, Extending Limits of U.S. Customs Waivers Act, H.R.E.S. 1112, Denouncing the Biden Administration's Immigration Policies, H.R.E.S. Unnumbered as of now, Opposing Efforts to Place One-Sided Pressure on Israel with Respect to Gaza, and H.R. 7320, the Reforming Intelligence and Securing America Act, about which we will talk more in a moment. This week in the Senate will return Monday with the first vote set for 5:30 p.m. At that time, the Senate will proceed to a roll call vote to invoke cloture on the nomination of Susan M. Bezis to be a U.S. District Judge for the District of Nebraska. Then, based on the Majority Leader's cloture filings, I anticipate we'll see action on the nominations of Robert J. White to be a U.S. District Judge for the Eastern District of Michigan, and Marie McKiff Allen to be a U.S. District Judge for the District of Utah. On Wednesday, the House will formally send to the Senate the 2 articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Majority Leader Schumer has said the trial will begin the following day with the swearing-in of senators to act as jurors. Each senator will be sworn individually in a very formal and time-consuming process. And then we're not sure what will happen. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Now to FISA reauthorization. Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, also known as FISA, expires on April 19th. That's a week from Friday. Twice now, the House has taken up bills to reform FISA. Twice now, the House has been unable to agree how to reform FISA, and the bill has been pulled from the floor. You'll recall that just a moment ago, as I was listing the bills the House would consider this week with a rule, I said the House would consider H.R. 7320, the Reforming Intelligence and Securing America Act. Well, that bill is the latest attempt to find a FISA reform bill that House Republicans can agree on. The bill is sponsored by Republican Congresswoman Laurel Lee of Florida. It extends the authorization for FISA for another 5 years and adds 56 reforms to the current law, including reforms to procedures used by the FBI to query the databases, increase accountability at the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and increase the punishments for wrongdoing. You may recall that the problem with the earlier iterations of a FISA reform bill centered on the FBI's ability to follow up on certain queries. Everyone agrees that the Fourth Amendment's protections do not apply to foreigners overseas, because they're foreigners and they're overseas. The question becomes, what happens when a search of the communications of a suspected foreigner turns up communications with American citizens? Those tasked with protecting us from another 9/11 say that oftentimes they simply don't have the time to go through the steps necessary to obtain a warrant when they need to know more that could help them stop a potential terrorist attack in real time. The House Intelligence Committee and the House Judiciary Committee strongly disagreed over what should happen in that case. Each had its own version of a FISA reauthorization bill. The Judiciary Committee's bill would have required the FBI to obtain a warrant from a judge before acquiring the databases further over the communications of an American citizen. The Intelligence Committee's reform bill would not have required that, based on the committee's different knowledge base. The members of that committee regularly get classified briefings about ongoing terrorist threats and different concerns and priorities. Speaker Johnson sent a Dear Colleague letter to his Republican colleagues last week, strongly pushing the conference to support the bill, explaining that if the FISA reforms in this bill had been in place back in 2016, the FBI would not have been able to abuse the FISA process to improperly surveil individuals associated with former President Trump or his campaign. The Speaker also warned in the letter that if the House does not pass the bill this week, The likelihood is very high that the Senate will simply jam the House by sending the House a simple reauthorization bill with no reforms of any kind. And the House will have no choice but to pass this so-called clean extension of FISA. The Rules Committee will meet on Tuesday to mark up the bill and decide which amendments to make in order. House Republicans will discuss the reauthorization bill at a conference meeting on Wednesday morning, and then the entire House, Republicans and Democrats, will receive an all-members classified briefing by officials of the intelligence community later Wednesday afternoon. Now to the latest on non-citizen voting. You may recall that the New York City Council in 2021 passed a municipal law that would have allowed non-citizens with green cards to vote in municipal elections. It was challenged in court before it ever went into effect, and in February of this year, an appeals court blocked the law from taking effect, ruling that it was unconstitutional. The New York City Council on March 25 appealed that decision to the state's highest court. Said a spokesperson for the City Council, quote, "Today's filing to appeal the Second Department's recent decision seeks a determination from the state's highest court that the law is consistent with the state constitution, election law, and the municipal home rule law," end quote. The council's argument is simple. Non-citizens who are here legally should be able to vote since they pay taxes and make contributions to their community. Staten Island President Vito Fossella, one of the lawmakers who filed the legal challenge, responded just as simply, quote, "In plain English, the New York State Constitution says only citizens have a right to vote in these elections. The City Council has no authority to do what it did," end quote. The timeline of the appeal is unclear at this point, but we'll keep our eye on this. Now the latest on banning TikTok. It looks like the Senate is not going to take up the TikTok bill that passed the House a few weeks ago anytime soon. Commerce Committee Chairwoman Maria Cantwell, Democrat of Washington, has indicated she wants to hold at least one hearing, and it looks like she may well want to change the bill. She could lengthen the period of time TikTok's owner, ByteDance, has to divest itself of the social media app from 6 months to something longer, or the bill could be amended to extend the focus to other social media apps. We'll see. Now let's get to the emergency supplemental / aid to Ukraine. Over the course of the Easter recess, Speaker Johnson was said to have devised a new approach to passing a bill providing U.S. assistance to Ukraine. His new approach, it was said, contained three elements. First, picking up on an idea believed to have the support of former President Trump, Johnson's bill would designate any future aid to Ukraine as a loan, much like the old Lend-Lease program FDR first employed to provide U.S. aid to Great Britain in the opening days of World War II, while we were still technically neutral in that conflict. Second, Johnson's approach would require the Biden administration to reverse itself on its recent decision to block approvals for building new liquefied natural gas export terminals. Johnson argues that by reducing U.S. natural gas exports, we are increasing the value of Russian oil exports and thereby funding our enemy, which makes no sense. Third, Johnson wants to have the Russians provide the funding for Ukraine by using seized Russian assets. Obviously, if any one of these provisions were to be attached to the bill that passed the Senate, let alone all three of them, and the bill passed the House, the Senate would have to take up the new bill because of the new provisions. But there are other problems. For one, it's fair to say that a slight majority of the House Republican Conference now opposes providing U.S. assistance to Ukraine. That means the only way a bill passes the House is with Democrat votes, so the bill must be attractive to Democrats. If you'll recall, when this bill was first proposed back in October, almost 6 months ago, aid to Israel was included with the aid to Ukraine. Though the funding for Ukraine was four times as much as the proposed aid for Israel, the aid for Israel was nevertheless there, and it was meant as a sweetener to induce members to vote for the bill. circumstances have changed over the last 5 months. Support for Israel is not as strong now as it was then. In fact, there is growing opposition to providing military assistance to Israel, and it's coming from the hard left wing of the Democrat Party. So Speaker Johnson is trying to figure out how to package a bill that provides aid to Ukraine and Israel. Maybe he decides it makes the most sense to split them up and bring them to the floor as individual standalone bills. Maybe not. Then there's the political angle, and I'm talking about the personal political angle. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia has filed a motion to vacate as what she calls a warning, and has made clear her determination to force a vote on it if Speaker Johnson brings to the floor a bill containing aid to Ukraine. She claims to know she has backers, but she hasn't said how many, and she hasn't said she knows she has enough backers to force him out of the speakership. Moreover, no one else has said he or she would be willing to vote to oust the speaker. So, we have no idea how serious that threat is, but it's got to be at least a consideration in the speaker's mind. Now to the latest on anti-Trump lawfare. A New York appeals court ruled that former President Trump did not have to fork over a bond for $455 million in order to appeal the New York State civil judgment against him. Instead, the bond was lowered to $175 million, which Trump was able to secure and post, allowing him to appeal the judgment. Elsewhere, Trump's lawyers' attempt to have the Florida federal case, that is, the case charging him with mishandling classified documents, ousted, was denied. Now to the latest on the Biden indictments. President Trump wasn't the only one whose lawyers' filings were being denied by judges. Hunter Biden's lawyers filed 8 different challenges to the tax charges against him, and each of them was denied, wrote the judge, quote, "The motion is remarkable in that it fails to include a single declaration, exhibit, or request for judicial notice. Instead, defendant cites portions of various internet news sources, social media posts, and legal blogs. These citations, however, are not evidence," end quote. Biden's trial will continue as scheduled. And now to the Jenny Beth Show, episode 60. Of the Jenny Beth Show dropped last Wednesday, and it's a real doozy. It features Jenny Beth's interview with former Congressman Bob McEwen of Ohio. McEwen represented Ohio's 6th congressional district from 1981 to 1993, that is, during the 12 years that Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush served as president, while America was turning itself around and winning the Cold War. As always, it's a fascinating interview. Highly recommended. And that's our Washington Report for this week.